Hey everybody, welcome to the BIC Life Podcast, BIC Life Podcast, where we talk about life and faith in Jesus from a brethren in Christ perspective. We are here in our episode this month. My name is Ryan Stockton, and I'm joined as usual by my good friend Scott McPheat.
Hey, how's it going, Ryan?
Going okay. Going all right.
Well, I gotta ask quick, what's that behind you?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so today I'm recording in one of my son's bedrooms.
Oh.
we have one homesick, and my wife is in our bedroom / home office, and so yeah. I'm recording in my other son's bedroom, and that is a Philadelphia Union flag for MLS, the professional soccer league here in the States.
Okay.
We are big MLS fans, big Philadelphia Union fans in our family, and so he's got a big old flag up on the wall. So that's my backdrop today.
Cool. I like how you got demoted to your son's room.
I know. Yeah, I get no respect.
Come on, son.
Yeah, I know. But he was very gracious in letting me use his room, so yeah. I'm thankful for that.
good.
So my other son is homesick today, and he's down playing the new Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Video game. So he's sick.
He's homesick. My other son was home sick yesterday too, and so he got to play some extra. Yeah,
but I remember those days.
Yeah, they actually are sick, but
I'm sick.
Oh shucks. Guess I gotta play some Tears of the Kingdom today.
right, that's awesome.
So yes, I'm in my son's room, and it's actually not too bad. I think it has even better lighting than my home office where we usually record. I'm not sure, but anyway, it's a nice background. I like the Philadelphia Union background thing going on back there. but things are going all right. Things are going all right over here.
Good.
I recently ran a Tough Mudder a couple days ago, one of those obstacle course races.
I don't know
if you remember. I asked you if you wanted to run that with me, and you laughed a little too loudly in my face.
I did. Was that the Atlantic Conference?
The Atlantic Conference General Meeting, I asked you.
And I said, what did I say? Well, does it involve heights? And you're like, yes. Does it involve getting dirty? Yes. Does it involve running? Yes. About a 5K, right?
It was a little under 10 miles. So 15K. Yeah.
A little bit of running. I don't do any of those things.
It was fun, but it was great. It was so much fun. The course was great. The mud was amazing this year.
Wow.
The obstacles were good, but I fell a little. So it's technically as a 15K, it's like 9.3 miles.
Yeah.
And with about a quarter mile left or a third of a mile left, I fell from one of the last obstacles. Fell kind of far, landed hard. I think I either pulled or partially teared my hamstring on my left leg. Mm-hmm. So I'm on crutches now. So that's fun.
Oh, and see, that's why I said no. Because I knew that kind of thing would happen to me for sure.
But I'll tell you, it's the first time I've done it. I've done five or six of these kinds of races. That's the first time I've gotten injured.
We are over 40 now. So
I know. Yeah, this is the oldest I've ever been running one of these races. Next year, I think I'm going to be a little younger, so that'll be good.
Were you one of the oldest in the race?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. No, there are plenty of people older than me. Yeah.
Good. Okay, good.
Yeah. So, it's great fun. Those courses are just so much fun. So I look forward to you doing it with me next year.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Yeah. You know, I'm pretty sure I saw on TV there's like a 5K one. I'd be more open to that. I think I could handle that. But
with
a little bit of running beforehand to prep, you know. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, there's a 5K, a 10K, and a 15K. And so... I did the 5K last year, and it was fun, but it was like 100 degrees that day.
Oh, goodness.
And full sun, and so 5K was killer. But the weather was perfect this past weekend, and it was the course was great. So, yeah, the 15K was just about right. I just had to drag my leg across the finish line for the last quarter mile or so.
Wow. You have like the Braveheart theme running through your head as you're running across the finish line.
Well, the medics came up to me and they're like, do you need a cart? I was like, no.
No.
I have already ran over 9 miles of this. I am not stopping now.
Oh my goodness.
Like if it had happened around mile three or four or something like that, yeah, I would have had to be carried off, carted off. But I was like, no. I have done over 9 miles. I'm finishing this race.
So, okay. Just not to prolong this, but like, you know, I like fitness, right?
Yeah.
So I hate cardio. I hate running. My lungs feel like they're going to fall out of my chest.
Yep.
And so last night, Amanda and I, when the weather's nice, we like to get out and walk. And we haven't done it in a while because, well, we just came off of winter.
Sure.
But last night we went over to the YMCA here in Willow Street. And they have a really nice park out back and a really long trail. It's about a mile long, just the perimeter of it. So we went around three times just walking.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
When I was done, my legs were like twitching all over the place. Like we started out at a great pace and then, lap two, I'm like, I think we're going to have to slow down a little bit, honey. Like I just can't do this.
I need to
get out there and condition my walking.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, you would do well with the obstacles themselves.
Yeah.
You would love those. So it's a little over 9 miles, but there are 30 plus obstacles.
Okay.
There. So it's just crammed.
So the obstacles are almost like a break.
Yeah, some of them.
They are. That's great, man. Well, sorry you're injured, but you survived.
It's fine. Of all the things that could be wrong, the recovery for this consists of rest for a couple of months. And if that's what it takes to heal from an injury, I'm doing okay. I'm not gonna need surgery, not gonna need to,
that's
like whatever. So, crutches for a few weeks and then rest for another few weeks. I should be fine.
Okay. But, good. So you want me to rest and just sit down and like watch TV? I can do that.
Yeah. Right? Oh, shucks. I guess I'm going to have to work from my couch today because I
can't.
Good
thing
sit on
Zelda came out.
Yeah, I know. Whee! Yeah.
Anyway,
I got a segue. Speaking of surviving in difficult conditions, first, I got a couple of silly articles here. So if you had to survive for 5 days in the wilderness eating only candy, what candy would you choose?
Oh, man. I'm assuming protein bars don't count, right?
Yeah.
Chocolate, what? Any kind of candy?
Any kind of candy, but no protein bars.
Well, I'm just going to choose my favorite, which would be the mini Reese's peanut butter cups.
Oh, that's a good choice.
After like day two, I'll probably die from a sugar, an excess of sugar, but hey, at least I'll be happy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I thought about maybe a Snickers.
Ooh.
That's like got a lot of stuff in it. That's almost cheating though. That's almost like a,
I used to think, when I was in my college days, I used to work out back then too, but I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. And so a friend of mine would meet at the gym at LBC and we'd put in like an hour long workout and I'm shocked we didn't injure ourselves. Cause like I said, we didn't know what we were doing. And then I'd go to Sheetz and I'd be like, oh man, I really need something. So I'd get like a Snickers bar and a chocolate milk. Oh
yeah. So Sheetz, for those of you who are not local to the Northeast here, Sheetz is not a restaurant. It is
I was just going to say they say, hey, that they basically are a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? You go make a Sheetz run.
It's a gas station.
It's a gas station. Yeah. It's like there's Wawa is around here. I don't know what the equivalents would be out in California or in the middle of the country or anything like that. But Sheetz is just a gas station. But yeah, it's more than a gas station. Yeah. There's a great video that came out years ago when the first Frozen came out. And there are all these spoofs of, do you want to build a snowman?
Yeah.
A song came out. One of them is, do you want to make a Sheetz run?
And Sheetz of pizza.
Oh my gosh. So we're derailing here.
Yes.
So surviving on candy. The first article I've got here, how wine and candy helped an Australian woman survive 5 days in the bushland. So there's a woman named Lillian, that's the only way she's being identified, who was lost in the Australian bush for 5 days, who survived on wine and candy.
Well, you need sugar. I mean, you do. The problem is we just have too much of it every day, and most of us just sit like you and I are doing right now.
Right.
But
yeah,
I suppose if you're surviving, you're probably trying to get out of the wilderness, and you're spending energy and all that. So
She was driving to visit her mom. And visit her mom. The bottle of wine was for her mom. Uh-huh. She herself doesn't drink. But the bottle of wine was for her mom. She brought some candy and snacks for the trip. It's only supposed to be a couple hour trip. Made a wrong turn. Ended up in the bush. No cell service. She's out in the middle of nowhere. The car got stuck in mud. And she was stuck for 5 days.
Wow.
So her only liquid was the wine. So eventually she broke down and had the whole bottle over the course of 5 days. Candy was eventually found, treated in the hospital, and appears to be no worse for the wear. But yeah, that's a survival obstacle course.
Goodness.
Right there. That's...
Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah, no thanks. Oh my gosh. So then the next article, which I thought was just so hilarious, in Germany. A German surgeon fired, this is the headline from Associated Press. German surgeon fired after getting hospital cleaner to assist with an amputation.
What?
So, so apparently this happened in the year 2020, so a few years ago, but just kind of came out in the news. There's a hospital in western part of Germany, Mainz University Hospital. There is a surgeon who is amputating a patient's toe. And there were no qualified assistants around. And so the patient only had local anesthesia and was starting to get restless. So the surgeon called in the janitor, had him hold his leg down, pass him the surgical instruments while the doctor amputated his toe.
Wow.
Yeah.
See that long blade over there? You know, can you pass that?
Yeah, see those really big scissors? I'm going to need those.
Wow.
Yeah, well, isn't that nuts?
I mean, if all he's doing is assisting, I mean.
Yeah, holding the leg down. Like, can you imagine getting that call? Like, you're out there mopping the floors, and you look through the window of the operating theater, and you see the doctor looking at you, like, waving his hand. Dude, get in here. Like,
Where was this again?
This is in Germany.
Well, you know, I mean, if everybody called off sick, I guess, what are you going to do? Like,
I mean, you postpone the surgery, right? It doesn't sound like it's amputating a toe. It doesn't sound like it's a immediate life or death.
I don't know.
But apparently another doctor walked by the operating theater and saw this janitor in there holding bloody instruments and things like that and holding the thing down. And that's how it was found out about it. The doctor has since been fired and all that. But apparently the patient... like there was no complications from the surgery or anything. The patient's doing just fine, but it was like, yeah, whoops.
Well, they had the right person in to clean up after.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
I guess so yeah, hey, thanks for helping us out. Can you just stick around and help clean up here? Grab your mop, come on in.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Would you have said yes? Like, if you were the janitor out there mopping, would you be like, yeah, this seems legit, I'll help?
Well, no, but only because that kind of stuff makes me very queasy. So
I'd have been on the floor.
I would be the worst person
to
be in there. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're no good around blood?
Nope. I don't watch the shows. It's hard enough to make hospital visits for me. I've always been like, I get lightheaded, and it's just so. Anyway, it's a matter of prayer anytime I have to do it.
Yeah. God, give me the strength.
Yes, please. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I guess it takes a certain amount of strength to be a hospital janitorial staff person.
Yeah.
I would imagine that is not a job for the faint of heart. I would imagine. So good on this guy, even if that was not the room he should have been in. But,
so let me ask you, is that article in any way connected with our topic today?
Well, we're not talking about amputations in the Brethren in Christ, but we are talking about cleaning and feet to a certain extent.
There we go.
For those who have been a part of the Brethren in Christ For a little while, you might be able to put that together. We're talking about foot washing today as our main story. And as happens sometimes when we look at a topic, we've got an article that can help springboard us into the topic. So in the publication Anabaptist World, with the subtitle Mennonite News Inspiring Stories, I had never heard of this publication, but it's a thing. So you can check it out, anabaptistworld.org. So on that website, they tell the story, and I'm going to see if I can give a succinct summation of this. There's in Ethiopia, there are some warring factions, different ethnic groups that have been fighting each other, and then rebel groups against the government there and things like that. And there have been some groups working on peace building, specifically I'm going to slaughter this name. Meserite Christos Church.
It's
an Anabaptist church in Ethiopia, and they've been working on peace building. And one of these peace building trainings that they did, the pastor or one of the directors of the peace building there demonstrated humility and service by doing a foot washing service. And he invited a Muslim and a Christian up to the front to wash, so that he could wash both of their feet. And people didn't think he was going to do it, but like he did. And it was really, it made a huge impression on this one guy. One of the guys who got up there to have his feet washed was a guy named Dergu Balena. And he was from an ethnic group which was doing a lot of armed conflict with the government and had killed people from other ethnic groups there in Ethiopia. He was so impacted by this and persuaded by this peace building training that he decided to start working for peace amongst some rebel ethnic groups. So this is a part that I find fascinating. He went to the local government and asked for a gun and bullets.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
Persuaded to pursue peace, he went to the government and asked for a gun and bullets. And the reason he did this was so that he could, like, I guess kind of give him some cred to go join a rebel group and work for peace from the inside.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
And so he's like, I'm going to go into this group and start working for peace from the inside, but I need a gun and some bullets to give me the cred to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the government, even more unbelievably, said, sounds good.
Yeah.
Like, they said yes, which is crazy to me. So he gets this gun and the bullets, and he goes, and for months he joins in with this group, and he starts this grassroots, like, talking about peace building and doing activities with them, and eventually leads like 600 of these rebel fighters to lay down their guns, start pursuing civil talks with the government and laying out their issues and demands, and they ended up having fruitful conversations, and he's now working for peace building efforts in Ethiopia. It's like, what?
Yeah,
like it is fascinating, and it started with a foot washing service, which I thought was amazing. Now I've seen foot washing services be impactful, but this was crazy.
Yeah,
what did you think when you saw this article?
I mean, I was blown away. I was actually wondering, like, it wasn't just a service, like it was a service within some sort of training,
right? Yes,
and I'm like, oh, so this guy already like thought. I think he was already like, you know what, this, you know, guerrilla fighting is not working. So
yeah,
maybe these guys over here have something to, you know, that works.
Yeah, he was already at this training. So I don't know if he was required, like caught and captured and required to attend this training, or if he volunteered and signed up for this sort of training. Mm-hmm. The fact that he was there in the first place means that there was some sort of seed planted.
Still, it's
to say,
you know,
that violence isn't the answer, but
in our world, you know, you and I would have had this whole event planned out. We would, oh yeah, so, you know, the first 10 minutes we're going to do the welcome, and then we're going to move into, you know, our guest speaker is going to come in, and then you know, we're going to have some worship, and then afterward we're going to close with a 15-20 minute segment of foot washing, and then no, this was more like this guy, I can't pronounce his name, was like, you know what, I'm gonna wash people's feet as an act of service, and nobody believed he'd even do it. So,
and a Muslim and a Christian,
like
he washed both of their feet, which is
that
really,
alone speaks a lot.
So what would the equivalent here be, like Republican and Democrat, like
I don't know.
It seems maybe. Almost like you talk about warring factions here in the States.
Right, right, right. Yeah, super extreme. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, so I found that, I found it fascinating because our church recently did its first foot washing service. It's a newer
first with
issue.
You or first with your church first. Period. Oh wow.
First for the church. So
okay.
We're not an old church, mm-hmm. But we're also not new either. We were started in the mid-90s. But it's just not been a part of our practice.
Yeah.
But you know, being in Brethren in Christ, I know it's a part of it's part of our logo, for Pete's sake, the towel and basin, you know, part of the BIC logo.
It is, actually.
You know. And so I know it's a big deal. I know a lot of churches do it and stuff. And I was like, you know, I love the idea, the symbolism, all that kind of stuff. So we did it for the first time this year during the Easter season. And it blew us away. We had far more people come and participate than we even thought was possible. People were weeping and just, it was an incredible experience for our church, for our people. And people are so excited to do it again. And I'm really excited about that. It's really cool. And so I saw some really cool and powerful moments at our church, but I was blown away by the effects from this instance of it in Ethiopia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and to be clear, I mean, you know, okay. So as we get into this topic, like, we're not saying foot washing is like the antidote or the answer to our problems.
No, not that was a silver bullet.
That was a God thing that happened over there.
Yeah.
And at your church, that was definitely a God thing. You know, that was, he blessed that moment and that was really impactful.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't manufacture.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like trying to say, hey, let's have a revival.
Right.
Let's go on ahead and plan to have
a revival.
Schedule
this and we're going to bring a bunch of people out. And
Yeah, you're right. That's a good call, Scott.
Well, I hate to say it, that can work too. I have air quotes going on, but only by the grace of God. Right. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right on.
And it sounds like in both cases, in the article's case and in your church's case, the hearts were right. You had a right posture going into that foot washing service. You know, it wasn't like a thing like, oh, I checked this off, you know, now I'm more holy.
Right. Yeah. 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 Right? Yeah. Well, yeah. And it was novel. I think it was novel for us and for that situation in Ethiopia. I think is because we haven't done it before. It was new and it really hit people in a certain kind of way, you know.
Yeah.
When it's new. So we'll see. I mean, I would love for it to become a part of our regular rhythm, even if it's just once a year. But, you know, we'll see if it ever becomes rote. We'll see if it's something that we, you know, want to continue with or take a break from for a little while.
I didn't always know what rote meant, but that just means like a pattern that you just kind of do because you just do it, like memorized.
Yeah, yeah, you do
like
it without feeling or
muscle memory. It's not heart.
Rote, R-O-T-E. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, a little English lesson here.
College words.
That's an SAT word right there.
So I was going to say my church
is...
Your church is how old? 1995?
Yeah, mid-90s. I think it was 98, 95, okay. Maybe 95.
We've traced our roots back to, I mean, technically on paper, it's 1913, but it's a little sooner than that because we were, our church was like a branch off of a community like kind of thing that was going on here in Strasbourg. So we're well over 100 years old.
Yeah, wow.
And I've been attending here. My wife and I have been attending here since, the fall of 2011. And foot washing has been a practice that stemmed way before that. Like, I don't know if there was ever, I can't say this for sure, but I don't know if there was ever a time when foot washing here was not practiced like once a year, typically on Maundy Thursday. That's the East. That's the Thursday before Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
For those listening, but now at our church, we pretty much followed this is going to be backwards, but this thing called a minister's manual. I thought every BIC pastor gets this, but I showed this to Ryan a minute ago and he's like, what is that?
I don't have one of those.
Well, this book is it's helpful. It has a whole lot of different kinds of services in there from a BIC perspective. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to run a communion service or a baptism service, and it has some examples of how you could do that and the liturgy behind it. And I often change the language because it was printed in 1991, and it's just like, wow, it just back then it probably felt old. So, because of the language, like it's pretty,
Ours was not very formal.
Yeah. So this is, it's pretty formal in there. And it says that, typically the deacons at your church are the ones that run this service. Your pastor will do a little like mini sermon, very mini, like devotional kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of lays out, you know, what you would do or how you could do it. I mean, you're free to do it however you want, but it does suggest that you have the men go into one room and the women go into another. Mm-hmm. And then once the foot washing part of it is done, you all join back together in the sanctuary for the remainder of the service, mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting and kind of telling, because I know, you know, thinking about where our culture is today, man, I mentioned this to you off mic, well, through emails, we were talking about this. Yeah. When I first became pastor, lead pastor here at Refton, I was thinking about this whole like foot washing thing and doing my own research. And one of the things that popped up that shocked me was how prevalent something like foot fetishes are in our culture. So I Googled it again, cause it, you know, I was back in like 2019 when I became pastor. I Googled it again, this, you know, just before we started this live stream. And there was if I remember right, there was a 2022 survey that said 1 in 10 people, Americans, have admitted to having a foot fetish. And then there was another 2023 study that said 1 in 7. That's a whole lot higher of a percentage than I ever would have guessed. So then 1 in 7. Yeah. So that's where my question of like, well, you know, if we're going to do this, we need to be able to put some safeguards in. And it does kind of sound like whoever wrote this minister's manual in 1991, like, you know, they were already thinking about that kind of stuff, the level of appropriateness. Now in our culture today, you might have a bit more of a dynamic with things that are going on right now.
Sure. Yeah.
But, so, yeah. I think from my experience, I've participated in foot washing services before. Mm-hmm. And I'm just speaking for me. Those services were meaningful. God definitely used those services. I'm not one that I don't, it would be a rare day you will catch me without my socks on and shoes. That's
I could see the wheels turning. How to say this right. Tactfully? Yeah.
how do I say this that I'm not offending anybody? I'm not a flip flop guy. Like that is not me. Feet have always been kind of a private thing. It's kind of kind of weird. I personally, I'll just say I do not struggle with like the foot fetish stuff, but like add that into the mix and it's like, who knows who's struggling, or what position I'm putting someone in. Now you could say, well, they just won't come out. And I know plenty of people that they've said to me, you know, when we had our, on Monday, Thursday, last year, or this past Monday, Thursday, we did a communion / Thursday evening meal. And there were several people that were concerned we were going to do foot washing. And they're like, look, if you're doing foot washing, I don't think I'm going to be there for that. And I'm like, well, number one, we weren't planning on doing foot washing. And they were fine with that. But number two, I think for them, it was just like this, it really makes people uncomfortable. And so I guess the question, Ryan, is foot washing a command or not? Should we, because I've had someone say, well, we should be doing it because Jesus said right there in John 13 that, you know, we need to be doing this. And so I thought maybe it'd be helpful to look at that. And then just kind of, you know, talk about it a little bit.
Well, John 13, I have it pulled up here near the end after he washes their feet. So starting in verse 15 or 14. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Verse 17, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. So verse 14 says you also should wash one another's feet. And then verse 17, you will be blessed if you do them. I could see how someone says this is a command, but to me, it doesn't seem as hard and fast. I think it's one of those things that that's like, well, we're going to be blessed if we do this. And so I think we could be missing out on a different kind of blessing that we could, you know, might not receive otherwise if we don't engage in it. But at the same time, I don't think it doesn't seem to be something
congregation just experienced that. You just said that was a huge blessing. It sounded like it anyway.
There was a guy who came up to me after the service and he's like, dude, Ryan, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, man, you got me feeling the spirit and crying and all this kind of stuff. I was like, I know, me too. So, I mean, we can be tremendously blessed from these kinds of services and these kinds of acts. But, I've talked with, you know, some other BIC pastors who don't practice foot washing in their churches, and they try to find the modern day equivalents, right? So the foot washing was the job that was, it was a servant's job. It was the job that nobody really wanted to do. It was gross. And so like, what are the equivalents now? The things that nobody wants to do, but it displays a tremendous amount of service and humility and others centeredness, valuing the other, things like that. And I don't think that that's wrong. Like, I don't think that that's a wrong way to take this scripture, this passage or interpret it or apply it. I don't think it's wrong. But I also don't think it's wrong to say, let's do actual foot washing, you know, because one of the things, like when we did it with our church, one of the things that we leaned into was the weirdness of it. We leaned into it. Like whenever I first announced it, you could see people visibly going, ugh, what we're doing. Yeah. You want me to do what? And so we just leaned into it. We're like, yeah. So we recognize that the first reaction is probably going to be ew. And you know what? It's kind of gross, but that's also kind of the point. Is it's weird, it's gross, it's what, you know, and especially nowadays when it's not as quote unquote needed, you know, when we're not a walking society, walking on dirt roads all everywhere to go, everywhere we go. And
we're running muddy obstacle courses.
I saw people running those courses in their bare feet. Like,
I bet.
People are hardcore and weird, but anyway.
But awesome, you know?
But awesome, oh my goodness. Feet of steel. They wash their feet with steel wool. That's what they do. Because it's so weird, it was that impactful. And we encouraged people to come and observe. You don't have to participate, but we'd love for everyone to come, but not everyone has to participate. And so we'd like people to come and at least observe the foot washing ceremony part of the service. And so we did, and plenty of people came just to observe, but ended up participating. Like, we had probably 20 or so people show up not intending to participate, but who ended up actually participating and being so thankful that they did. To your point, it won't be as impactful for everybody.
Yeah.
It's a God moment. It's nothing we can manufacture.
Yeah. Did I say that on air? I don't know if I said that yet.
Oh, maybe didn't, but
we were talking before the yeah, maybe I hit record and
when we had our conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Yeah. So like for me, it's this is a personal thing, by the way. It doesn't mean it has to be for you or anybody else, but for me, it's not as impactful, as, you know, if it, I don't know how to say this. If I'm doing it on some sort of regular basis, I have a fear that it's not going to be as impactful for me. Like I've done it a few times in my life, and those points were pretty meaningful with the people that I was with. I don't know. I just wonder, like, for me, if this is all I do, am I pigeonholing myself? So like, like, you know, this command, well, first of all, it's not a command, which you already said, but like, even in the Greek, there's no command there. There's no imperative Greek word in there that makes it a command. And, you know, verse 17, you will be blessed if you do them. That's plural. So that's talking about more than one thing. It's not just talking about washing people's feet. And so it's, the question becomes like, why was that so impactful for them? And you already touched on it. You know, it was like something that nobody wanted to do, but it was more than that. It was like, if you were a Jew, you didn't do it. Only Gentile servants did this. So it was like really unheard of. And even prior to Jesus in ancient history, Old Testament history, this was a regular practice when people entered into each other's homes, because everybody wore sandals. Sandals back then were barely like, you know, like our soles inside of our shoe, that with a couple straps on it, like barely that. So when you went into someone's home, like, or tent or whatever, like, you know, it was dirty. And they always had a basin there. And if they didn't have a servant, like a Gentile kind of servant to wash your feet, you did that yourself. Because it was just too, like, you washed your own feet. It was too, as you said, low of a position kind of thing. Like, you just didn't do that. I had to nerd out a little bit, before I met with you today. So I was curious. I'm like, well, when, you know, how many times does it talk about washing feet in the Bible? Cause I know it only mentions it a couple times in the New Testament. Three times that I know of. I think, there was that time in Luke where was it Mary who washed Jesus's feet with her hair?
Yeah.
And Jesus, you know, actually she did that because some other guy wouldn't wash Jesus's feet. And then we have this one in John 13, which is very symbolic. And then we have one in 1 Timothy, I believe it was, with the widow. So a widow who is over 60, I think, you know, is qualified for certain things if she shows good character, and one of the examples of showing good character is washing the believer's feet. But in the Old Testament, it actually talks about it a whole lot more than I realized. So can you guess where, you know, what's the first book that foot washing comes up in?
Oh goodness, you're putting me on the spot here.
Just take a guess.
Even if you didn't put me on the spot, I wouldn't even if I had 20 minutes to think about this.
Just take a guess.
Exodus.
Oh, you're so close. You're one book off. Genesis.
Genesis.
18 I was like, chapters
which direction?
18 chapters in. If you remember when Abraham, sitting by himself in front of his tent, all of a sudden had three visitors. And we know, we end up from Genesis 19, we know two of them are angels.
Right.
This is right before Yahweh God judges Sodom and Gomorrah and all that. And Abraham like pleads, you know, for, I believe, Sodom. Because his family, Lot, and people were there. Well, anyway, these three visitors approach Abraham, and right away, you know, he offers them rest under a tree and to wash their feet because they were just traveling, and that was the normal, like, customary thing to do. Actually, he said, then you may all wash your feet. So he wasn't going to do that for them. Sorry, guys. You're going to do that yourself. But yeah. to get a basin, like you said in our logo, the basin and the right, towel, yeah. Like that was what you did. So there's plenty of examples in Genesis. I won't go over all of them, but you're right. Exodus, it comes out. So maybe you were thinking about this in Exodus because it's, was it Exodus or was it Leviticus? I think it was Exodus. Yes, Exodus. Aaron and his sons were to wash their hands and their feet, you know, before they would walk into like the, you know, sacred space.
Yeah. I thought it might've had something to do with ritual cleansing
yes.
and yeah. things like that. So, which is why I said Exodus, but yeah, remember.
Well, you're right. It has everything to do with ritual cleansing because it says, look, if you don't wash your feet, even if everything else is clean, if you don't wash your feet, like you're risking death. So that's how serious it was, you know, when you approach God. But it wasn't like washing feet symbolized, you know, purification of sins and that kind of thing. Funny thing is, later on, though, there was a branch of teaching that was exactly that. It baptism and washing of the feet were linked, like, and linked to, like, you know, forgiveness of sins and that kind of stuff. Now we're talking after Jesus, like second, yeah, third.
When are we talking here?
Second, third, fourth century.
Oh yeah.
And so this guy, oh goodness, Mr. Foot Washing McGee. His name started with an A. I can't remember. If I find it, I'll put it up on the screen.
Amos Foot Washing McGee.
Yeah, he argued in front of all the, you know, the council that was there. The I forget which council this was, but he argued that they should be doing this, and that because it was like, you know, this important ritual, while others were arguing that they shouldn't be doing it all. And then Augustine, you've probably heard of him. Mm-hmm. He came along around the same time and said, no, we should be doing it, but it's symbolic of it's a pattern of what the, you know, what the Lord did for his disciples in humility. And actually that's that word. I have in John 13:15, I've set you an example. Jesus says, I have set you an example. It's a pattern that you should do as I have done for you. And some scholars said, it's not just washing feet. Like Jesus died for them. So yeah. There's a pattern.
Yeah. You know,
the,
right.
the ultimate yeah. sacrifice.
Yeah. The self-sacrificial love that Jesus consistently modeled in different ways for his people.
So I think you're right on in saying, like, look, what are ways, whether it's foot washing or something else in our own culture today, what are radical ways in which we as believers can pattern ourselves after Jesus in serving those around us, each other and those around us. So, I don't know. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, like, you know, volunteering at Water Street or whatever, that's great. But I just wonder, like, that's still not like that's, we should be doing that kind of stuff. I'm not saying we shouldn't. But for some reason that it's like, what is something that we would never do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just like socially, we would just never do that. And then yet do it anyway, because it's a need. That's the thing with foot washing originally, like in Genesis 18, it was a need. You know, and even in Jesus's culture, the first century, it was still a need. Not everybody was riding around in chariots, you know? So what's the need today? I feel like I'm preaching a sermon here, but
yeah, right. You know, yeah.
Feel free to jump in, Ryan.
let's ask those rhetorical questions, give people something to think about on their way out.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's tricky because it's not just serving people, but serving people in a way that costs you.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and something that it's not even something that you would brag about either.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I was floored about what happened at the foot washing service at our church this past, you know, Easter season.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm excited to share about and stuff. But Jesus washing his disciples' feet wouldn't have been something that he or they bragged about, you know, or touted or talked to other people about much. It was scandalous. Mm. And it was scandalous to wash the sandal-less. Huh? Scandalous to wash the sandal. Wow, boy, that's hey, good job, Ryan. That was great. But you know, like these days, you know, you go and you serve at a homeless shelter, or you serve a Thanksgiving dinner for those who are jobless or whatever, and you Instagram that, you know, and you get culture points, you know, social points. Hey, look at you! Isn't this great? But you know, what are the things that we can do that are costly? You know, you don't usually Instagram you cleaning a clog in your neighbor's toilet,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it might be. You know, like that's the stuff that you do in quiet submission and quiet service to someone else. What are those things? I don't know. There's probably as many options as there are people in relational situations. But what are some things that we can do to show people love and service that cost us something, be it financial or otherwise? It's interesting to think about what those could possibly be. And you could really get some, you know, if you get some creative imagination going, you can just find endless ways to serve
that are
fascinating.
I'm looking something up here. Where is that in James about giving your jacket or your cloak or something? Oh, there it is. James chapter 2. Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in filthy old clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, "Here's a good seat for you," but say to the poor man, "You stand there," or "Sit on the floor by my feet," have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?
Mm.
And I thought there was something about giving your jacket, though. Anyway.
Well, there's the passage in the Sermon on the Mount talking about if someone sues you for your shirt, give them your coat also.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I don't know.
That's Matthew 6.
Maybe I'm merging both. But I was thinking this morning, like, and as silly as this sounds, trust me, I understand I almost hesitate to even give this as an example of humble servitude.
Mm.
So maybe two seasons ago now, marching band seasons ago.
Okay.
I was at a marching band show called a coalition. This is where a whole bunch of marching bands come together and we perform to each other. We're not judged or anything. It's not a competition. It's a coalition. So it's
not an adjudication.
All the bands get to watch each other and it's fun. And like 1,000 cool. people are cheering for you on the,
holy
on the
moly.
Sideline. Yeah. It's awesome. Wow. So anyway, you know, and I'm like at this point, probably 38 years old, you know, and I'm the percussion instructor of the LS marching band. Like that's my job is to be in charge of the drum line.
Mm.
So you would think I'm responsible, right? it's probably October, late October. And it's one of those days where it was warm during the day. Like we were, you know, on a coalition day, you get to the school early and you practice for a few hours before you make the drive out to the show, and it was warm. And so I didn't think to bring a jacket. Well, it got really cold that evening when the sun went down and we started performing, and I had an assistant who was a college guy. He's an assistant drumline instructor and, really nice guy. I don't know if he's a believer or not, but he modeled example of humble servitude to me that night, because I felt like my pride was about as low as it gets. You know, as the guy in charge, and he could see that I was like really struggling because it was so cold, and I called my wife and she couldn't make it out, you know, to bring me a jacket or anything. And He's like, dude, I have a jacket in the car. I can go get it for you. You know, you can wear my jacket all night. I don't care. You know? And I'm like, you know how it is. It's kind of like, I don't really want to be a burden. Right. And finally I was so cold. I just gave in. I'm like, sure. And he did, he went and got it. And so I'm wearing his jacket with his name on it, all night. And everybody's like, why are you wearing his jacket? Of course, then you got to tell the story because I wasn't responsible enough to remember my own. And he's in college. He's like basically, you know, invincible when you're that age.
My gosh. So
I realize that's not a perfect example, but it's like there is an example of where in a way my own pride was like tested, my own humility. Right.
Yeah.
And man, he didn't think twice. He's just like, no, it's not a problem. Like I don't need a jacket. Like you can keep it, you know, like that's, you know, I wore it home and then gave it to him the next time I saw him.
Yeah. So
anyway, I don't know. Oh, I know that's a little thing, but that meant a lot to me and I never told him that, but,
well, I'm sure he listens to this podcast.
Sure. Oh, I'm sure he does.
So I'm sure he's heard it. He's at home. Hey, honey, do you hear this story? Yeah. That was me.
Yeah. But I guess my point is there's all these little ways in which people impact us. So he met a need, or like a real need. And there was a humbling aspect to it now. So I guess it's like, well, how can we be more aware to people around us, to their needs and to meet their needs in that kind of way?
Right.
And that's not to say we shouldn't program services like you know, you guys programmed a foot washing service. Like I'm not saying we shouldn't do that. I'm just saying, you know, when Jesus is talking about setting an example or setting a pattern for us, that's like a life day by day pattern that we live out, right?
Well, and one of the things I like about that, Scott, about your story there is that it seems like such an ordinary thing, you know, like that's an ordinary moment that someone was able to step into. And I feel like, this foot washing thing, in some ways it was an ordinary moment because like what you were talking about, this is a thing that happened a lot in the culture at the time. It's an ordinary thing, but when Jesus did it, it made it extraordinary because he was a rabbi, because he was a Jew washing other Jews' feet. and you know, like it was an extraordinary thing out of an ordinary moment.
Well,
and
Peter was shocked, like right?
So, I mean, so I feel like if we can take these moments in our lives, kind of create, like I was talking before, this creative imagination to say, what are some ordinary moments that I can kind of have a radar up, you know, like I'm hoping by doing foot washing services in our church, kind of creating or helping us to develop a radar for these, while we practice an actual foot washing, even though it is symbolic, we're not like sitting there scrubbing each other's toenails and stuff.
Right.
It's a very ritualistic pour water over and then dry with a towel. It's very, you know, it's not, this is symbolic foot washing. Yeah. Just like our communion is a symbolic meal that we take together.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
So, so it's a symbolic thing, but it is a physical practice. So just like we do that, I'm hoping that it can help us develop the radar for the modern day equivalents. So we've always got that, you know, the dish, you know, going around at the top of our heads, you know, with the radar up to search for those ordinary moments that we can step into that maybe no one else would step into, you know? And just trying to find ways to love people in service oriented ways, in ways that put quite literally elevate or put other people first over our own needs or over our own social status or standing. Whatever it is, and whatever it costs us to be able to think in those ways, I think is really important. And sometimes an actual foot washing service can help us at least train ourselves in that mode of thinking.
And you know, it's like, Jesus didn't say this about foot washing, but he did say this about you know, the Last Supper. When you drink of this cup, when you eat of this bread, do this in remembrance of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, you know, that same attitude could be applied to the pattern that he's talking about with foot washing and the other things that we do in service of others. Like we do those. It's not just like, yeah, I do this for the Lord. I do this in remembrance of the Lord. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it can be an act of worship as well as service.
Exactly. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Which kind of brings me, I wanted to see if we could tie some of these into some BIC core values.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Like, why is this such a big deal for us? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a big deal for the Anabaptists. You know, they kind of,
yes.
As the Anabaptists were starting their thing, we talked about the Anabaptist roots last month in our last episode with Matthew Peterson,
mm-hmm.
Theologian in residence of the Great Lakes Conference. The Anabaptist movement brought foot washing back into prominence of practical, tangible practice and faith.
Yeah.
And as I was looking at some of our core values, numbers 4 through 8. So I highlighted just 5 of them. Following Jesus, we value wholehearted obedience to Christ Jesus through the empowering presence of the Holy Spirit. So, kind of following the template of Jesus, the model of Jesus, like what you were just talking about, it being an act of worship as well as service.
Mm.
Jesus didn't just give us teachings to follow and obey. He gave us a model to live like,
yeah.
You know, he gave us a template to follow. So it's not just about believing the right things in the right way and with the right perspective. It was about living a certain way. And
right.
He modeled that. So following Jesus, I thought was a big one.
Yeah.
As you look at some of the other core values, do you have them there in front of you? What other ones pop up?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, that's fine.
I don't have them in front of me.
So belonging to the community of faith, I thought this was a one that would really, we value integrity in relationships, mutual accountability, and atmosphere of grace, love, and acceptance. There is not much greater act of acceptance than washing someone else's feet and having your own feet be washed by someone else. Witnessing to the world, we value an active and loving witness for Christ to all people. When we, during our Easter season, we advertised our Easter service.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big Easter event to our community that we advertised, had lots of people come in and participate and come into the building and all this kind of stuff. Our Good Friday service, we didn't advertise. We did it for Good Friday service. I know it's usually a Maundy Thursday thing, but we did ours for the Good Friday service. And that was like an in-house intimate, hey, this is for us kind of a thing. But it can be an incredibly tangible witness to the world in the ways that we serve and love each other.
Yeah.
So I thought that was one. Serving compassionately. We value serving others at their point of need, following the example of our Lord Jesus. That gets a lot to what you were talking about. So it's a need. It was an actual physical need back when it was actually a regular practice in life in the time of Jesus.
Yeah.
Serving others at point of need, the guy giving you his coat,
you know,
when you were cold. And then pursuing peace. We value all human life and promote forgiveness, understanding, reconciliation, and nonviolent resolution of conflict. I mean, what greater example of this do you need than the article that we just read that got us springboarded onto this topic? So those are the ones that stood out to me.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. I think, I don't know if this is a good landing point, but I just can't help but think of the word posture. That has been, somebody said that in one of my pastor cluster groups that I meet with once a month, said that early on this year. I think it was like December or January. And I just immediately like resonated with me when they were talking about the posture of our heart. Not that I had never thought of it before, but for whatever reason, it just hit me. And I just had that thought of like, this is going to be like that thing that keeps coming back this year for me, at least maybe. Like, what is the posture of my heart? And when I think of foot washing, what's the servant doing? Look at the posture of the servant.
Yeah.
Like, they're wow, you don't, you're on your knees. You're vulnerable. If you want to be really, if you want to enact exactly what Jesus was doing, like you basically just have a towel around yourself.
Right. Yeah. We didn't do that. but yeah.
You know, but just like, you know, so here's Jesus on his knee, like, you know, the Messiah on his knees, serving his people in that way. And like, you just didn't do that in that culture. Mm-hmm. That posture, that of the heart, the pattern of the heart is so, so impactful. So,
and I, you know, as you talk about that posture, the core value of witnessing to the world, what an incredible opportunity for witness to our world is a posture, is that kind of posture. Like, who in our culture is so combative,
right?
So, you know, black and white and polarized and, so at each other's throats, so extreme, to have this kneeling heart posture with people, is just such a different way to live.
Yeah.
I think it can be an incredible witness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. That's a good word, posture. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's a good word to end on.
There we
go. Good posture. And it's, to circle things around here, easier to kneel in front of people when you got all your toes. So you can keep your balance a little better, but maybe having your feet washed takes a little bit less time if you have one less foot to be washed, one less toe to
there
be washed.
Go.
And thinking about that other article.
There you go. You know what? Next year, if I run this race with you, we'll have our wives at the end ready with towel and basins.
And
we'll wash each other's feet.
Well, I'll tell you, Andrew usually
in front of all those people,
my wife usually runs these with me.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Oh. Yeah. She's pretty hardcore. She runs them with me.
Well, maybe it's fun. Convince Amanda. Although, could we find something that's not like 15 miles long, like for 10
it wasn't
or whatever?
15 miles. It was 15K. So, 10, so, you know, less than 10 miles.
Somewhere around the 3 to 4 mile range.
Right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. All right, dude. Yeah. Scott, thanks for the good conversation today, man. It was fun to fun to chat.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime.
So, all right, man. Well, thanks everyone for joining us for our episode this month, Bic Life Podcast. And if you have any questions about this, questions for us or thoughts about, you know, if you have stories from foot washing services in your church, we would love to hear them and maybe share them on a future episode. Reach out to us at BicLifePodcast@gmail.com. Again, BicLifePodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And thanks for listening. Thanks for checking in. And we'll see you next time, or you'll hear us next time. However you imbibe of this particular podcast.
That's right. Hey, see you later.
See everyone.
Thanks for listening to the BIC Life Podcast. Brethren in Christ, churches exist to follow Jesus, serve others, and make disciples. If you're looking for more information about the BIC denomination, or if you're looking for one of our local churches, head over to bicus.org. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the podcast, you can do so by emailing us at biclifepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.